This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Scientists at the University of Nottingham in Malaysia are busy working on a range of research projects, from curing dengue with papaya leaves to studying ways to manage Malaysian elephants. Joining me now to discuss these are Professor Graham Kendall. He's a university's provost and CEO, obviously from University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Welcome, Professor. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Tell me a little bit about, you know, your role, your responsibility specifically here in Malaysia.
Well, I actually started in Malaysia in 2011 as the Vice Provost for Research, and I assumed this role in 2016. So in 2011, I came to Malaysia, so I've been here about 7 years. Mm-hmm. 2016, I'm now the CEO and Provost, and I'm also a Pro Vice Chancellor of the University. I'm due to be here another 3 years, but according to my wife and to me, we're not going to leave Malaysia unless you throw us out.
Well, you're more than welcome to stay. And I want to talk a little bit about the research that the university is conducting. And it's a very interesting one. You know, something that we hear about a lot of people using papaya leaves, you know, to manage actually dengue. I know you had some experiences yourself with dengue, unfortunately.
I did. Back in 2014, I got dengue. luckily, at the time, I didn't know I had dengue. I was in China at the time, and I got dengue here and went to China. And then it takes about 10 days, I think, before it really kicks in. And I didn't say anything to anyone because I assumed that everyone would say I had man flu, which I probably did, or that's what I thought. But we quickly realized it was probably dengue. And then when I left China, I was in bed 20 hours a day because it just makes you feel so lethargic. Yeah. Luckily, I didn't have rashes or headaches or vomiting or hurt. You know, my bones didn't hurt, which is one of the symptoms. But I did collapse Beijing Airport when I was checking in, and they wanted to take me to hospital in China, but I managed to persuade them to put me on the plane. So I came back, went straight to hospital. Our human resources department in the UK wanted to repatriate me. But I figured that a Malaysian hospital could actually treat dengue better than if I landed at Heathrow, I'd probably go to a hospital in Slough. And I suspect they've never seen dengue. So I spent 4 days in hospital on a drip. Still didn't realise how bad it was. Mm-hmm. And my blood counts went down to 21. My really know what that means, but apparently that's quite bad.
Very bad, yes.
Came out, and it took me about 3 months to recover. So I'm glad to still be here, actually. And I'm glad at the time I didn't realise how bad dengue was or it could be.
Yeah, because, you know, it's something that you hear about people getting it all the time. And, you know, I think people don't even know that there's 4 different strains. Mm. And they think even if you get it the once, you won't get it again. But no, you can get the other 3 strains of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, a colleague of mine, he got dengue a couple of months after I did, after laughing at me. And so justice was done. and now he got another strain of dengue recently. And it's worse, apparently. Well, it was for him, it was worse the second time.
Yeah, that's what they say.
In some ways, I'm glad I've had dengue. It makes me sort of feel as if I've become climatized to the tropical climate. Mm-hmm. But I don't want it again.
I don't think anybody would. So let's talk about the university's research. Now, you are actually focusing on turning papaya leaf into a cure for dengue fever. Why is that? Why was that focus there?
Yeah. I mean, we're doing a lot of research at the moment on health. We've got 3 main strands that we're talking about at the moment. Health, one of those being dengue. And breast cancer, which we're not going to talk about today. Also conservation environment, which I think we'll talk about later on. Yeah. And also food security, feeding an ever-growing population. They're the sort of 3 things. Hopefully, over the last few weeks, you'd have seen that highlighted in around the town, mm-hmm. Around Kuala Lumpur. But specifically on dengue, I've obviously got an interest in it because I had dengue back in 2014, as we've just said. And when I had dengue, everyone was telling me to go and get some papaya leaves. Yeah. And they were also telling me to drink crab soup and all sorts of other stuff. And I didn't really do any of that. I just stayed on the hospital and stayed on a drip because I assumed it was just an old wives' tale. And many old wives' tales do have some truth, but, you know, there's so many of them, you don't know which one to believe. Yeah. But I think papaya leaves do have some truth. And, you know, the researchers that I work with at Nottingham are looking at that at the moment, trying to extract bioactive elements from papaya leaves and using that as a cure, hopefully, for dengue, because there's no solid cure
there's
at
no
the moment.
Cure, yeah. So tell me a little bit about how that research is going. I mean, who is leading the research and what exactly are you trying to produce?
Yeah. So the research is led by Dr. Ching Hick Lee. He works in our biosciences, School of Biosciences. And what he's actually trying to do is extract something called carpane from papaya leaves. Mm-hmm. But it's not quite as easy as just extracting it. I mean, there's lots of challenges that he's facing, for example, how best to extract it, mm-hmm. Because you just can't go and milk a papaya leaf, for example.
Yeah.
And then once you've extracted it, how do you store it?
Mm-hmm.
Typically, back in the day, or I suppose even now, the typical way of doing it is to dry it in the sun or even in an oven, mm-hmm. and then crush it and then do something with it.
Some sort of juice from it,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But we're looking at ways of using freezing technologies because we think that's a better way of extracting the active agents in carpane.
Mm-hmm. And I understand there are two different phases to, you know, research ways to preserve this carpane?
Yeah, so I think... And bearing in mind, I'm not an expert in this, but I think you can either freeze it or you can dry it. And once you've done that, then obviously there are two different ways of maintaining that. And I think one of the things that our researchers are doing is find, once you've done whatever you do with it, then how do you best store it? Because
right.
obviously you want to store it so that you can pass it around to people, but you also want to make sure that the active elements are in there. It's pointless being able to store it, but the active elements actually go down,
mm-hmm,
and you
mm-hmm.
can't use them. So that's a research challenge. That's a research question we're trying to answer.
Okay, so it's good to keep it at its optimum.
Correct.
In essence.
Correct.
Right? And, how long has this research been going on?
It's been going on a number of years. We work with some other universities. I think we work with UPM.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with the Ministry of Higher Education. So it's been going on a number of years. But I think it's one of those areas where it's done in phases, you know, so it goes in peaks and troughs. And at the moment, I think we're really on to something. So it's the height of the research that we're doing in this area at the moment.
Okay, all right. And do you also get your students involved in all of this research?
Yeah, obviously we have undergraduates and masters and PhD students. And many of those students have, a number of students have done their PhDs or masters working with the team that develop these research methodologies.
Mm-hmm. All right. And I suppose, what are your hopes for the future in this aspect? You know, what do you hope all of this will actually lead to?
Well, I think there's another number of challenges we've still got to face. One of the big problems is that you only get about 1.8 grams of carpane out of 20 kilograms of papaya,
mm-hmm.
papaya leaves. And papaya leaves is not grown that widely in Malaysia. So even if we manage to find the silver bullet of we can actually extract it, we can store it, we can make sure it retains its active components. How do we extract enough? Because I think last year in Malaysia there's something like 171,000 cases of dengue.
Yeah.
You know, so if we're going to treat 170,000 people in Malaysia, let alone throughout the rest of the world, we need enough papaya leaf. So that's one of the big challenges. How do we actually extract enough of this carpane to actually, you know, make it a worthwhile?
Yep.
Assuming we can answer all these research questions about how do we extract it, how do we store it, how do we maintain its active ingredients, then really we need to work with a pharmaceutical company, because obviously doing stuff in a lab is different to actually putting it out to market.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a pharmacist, but I guess there's lots of trials you have to go through before you can start selling it to the general public or making it available. So we need a big pharmaceutical company to come on board, but they'll only come on board when we've actually got something that actually works. So they're the big challenges, I think. How do we extract it, store it, make sure it keeps its active ingredients? How do we extract enough? And then how do we make it available to the public?
Mm-hmm. But you have had some successes. I mean, what do you think was some of the greatest achievements so far?
I think it's just that we are making inroads into dengue, which has been one of those diseases which for years has never really had any cure.
Yep.
The best thing you can do is go into hospital, get on a drip, and hopefully that, you know, your blood counts don't go so low that you hemorrhage. So I think it's as in much research, it's small incremental steps. But we have had some successes in extraction. We have had some successes in freeze drying. We have had successes in making sure that that compound does actually work and does actually affect the, you know, the dengue virus.
Sure.
But it's just research is one thing, writing papers is one thing, but then actually getting it out to the general public is something else.
Yeah.
So we've had a lot of successes, but we've got a lot of challenges and still to face.
Okay, all right. And this is an ongoing thing, but what is your hope then, you know, for all of this? How do you see this moving forward, or the university taking it forward?
Well, I would love for us to work with a major pharmaceutical company mm-hmm. to come and work with us and to take it to the next level, to actually put it into full-scale trials, the human trials, and hope, you know, I would love it to actually be a cure for dengue. I mean, that's the big vision.
Of course.
Whether that will be the case, I don't know. But I think we need a big pharmaceutical company to come on board to help us with that.
Okay. All right. And I know the university is also looking at other things, you know, concerning dengue as well, looking for plant-based sort of solutions to actually help cure dengue or prevent dengue as well.
Yeah, there's someone else, Dr. Sandy Lowe, is working with tobacco plants, mm-hmm. Which has got some active compounds in there, which may have some impacts on dengue. I think that research is a lot less developed, but, you know, it's such an important disease that we'll look at any avenue we can.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully Sandy will make some inroads into that as well, and maybe even beat the papaya leaves to market.
Awesome. All right. I'm speaking today to Professor Graham Kendall. He's from University of Nottingham, Malaysia. He's the university's provost and CEO. And we were just discussing, you know, the university's research into papaya leaves, using papaya leaves as a cure for dengue. And coming up after this quick break, we're going to find out more about the university's research into the conservation of Malaysian elephants. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, PFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Professor Graham Kendall. He is from the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, and he's the university's provost and CEO. And we're discussing, well, some of the research that the university is undertaking. Before this quick break, we spoke about papaya leaves as a cure for dengue. Now we're going to talk about something quite different, the management and ecology of Malaysian elephants, so which I think is known as MEEM for short. Tell me a little bit about this, Professor. You know, how did it even get its start?
Well, it started, and I guess like many acronyms, the acronym came before the name and you try and fit it in.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not true, but I suspect it is. But it really started in 2011 when we were luckily enough to work with Yayasan Sai Darby, YSD, and they funded our research to a value of 3.36 million ringgit on elephant conservation. And they've just extended that funding last year with another 1.9 million ringgit, which will take us through to December 2019.
Wonderful.
So hopefully they see some value in what we're doing. Otherwise, they wouldn't have given us almost another 2 million ringgit.
Yep.
So it really started in 2011 as a funded project. But of course, like all research, it sort of starts as a disparate set of researchers doing things and then coming together and then deciding to work on this sort of one vision. I mean, I think a lot of research, you need a vision. And if you can bring that and then you can get someone else interested, as we did with Sime Darby, mm-hmm. then I think you've got a good research project.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, I mean, if they've extended it, so you're onto something there. But tell me about the people behind it. You know, who have you got working on it?
Well, the main researcher behind it is Dr. Himza, who I believe has spoken to you a number of times.
Yes, yes.
He's the main person. He leads quite a big team of people working on different aspects of elephant conservation. But Dr. Himza is really the person that leads it from our point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's an inspirational researcher. He just inspires people. I didn't even know about elephant conservation before I started at Nottingham, before I started in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can't go anywhere without actually hearing about it. And it's just one of those things that he just inspires people to be interested in it.
Yes, I think because also, you know, there's so many things related to it. You know, it's also about, you know, seed dispersals and so much things. But let's focus on MEEM's research. I mean, what were the main aims like when you first started out?
I think the main aim, when we started or when Himza started, it was really about looking at two main things. One about habitat loss,
mm-hmm.
Because we're gradually, as in many areas of the world, taking down the rainforest, and that's where the elephants live. And that brings pressures onto the elephant. So that brings into play human-elephant conflict. And that was the main idea, really, is that I once gave a talk somewhere and said we should ask people in Malaysia to fund our research because, you know, I'm sure they don't want to lose elephants.
Mm-hmm.
And someone said, no, that's like asking people in London to fund research into rats because rats are a pest in London.
Yeah.
And many people see elephants
unfortunately,
as a pest in Malaysia. And I didn't realise that. I thought, well, they're not cute, but I thought elephants were wonderful creatures and no one would ever want to see them disappear. That certainly wasn't the view. I said no one. They said no farmers in Malaysia would fund research into supporting elephants because they just want to get rid of them. So it was really about what are we going to do about the habitat loss, and because of that, what are we going to do about human-elephant conflict? So one of the things that AHIMSA's team did, in fact, one of the first things they did, working with other agencies, but they put GPS trackers on elephants and then relocated the elephants. And you can imagine that relocating an elephant is not easy. And they were worried that actually when you moved an elephant somewhere, it would eventually just wander back to where it came from. And no one ever knew whether that was the case or not. So they put some collars on elephants and they relocated them. And I was lucky enough to be out with him at 2 o'clock one morning when they were doing this. And he was quite worried because I'm a computer scientist. So I've never been out. I never get out into the real world. And he was saying, be careful, don't stand there, because they have to drug the elephant to put the tracker on. And then when the elephant comes round, you know, who knows what it's going to do. But it was fascinating to be out in the jungle, 2 o'clock in the morning, to watch this GPS collar put on, and then the elephant released and went wandering off into the jungle. And then, obviously, because you've got a GPS collar on, you can track the elephant. And that led to lots of insights into the way elephants wander around, whether they come back to where they've come from. There was some work being done where they tend to follow the roadsides. They tend to stay on the roadsides. And we believe, I think we believe, Ahimsa could tell me, but we think that's because the vegetation is nicer at the roadside because it's quite new and fresh. But we did find that elephants didn't really cross the roads very much. So if you build a road through a rainforest, that might seem to be not such a bad thing, but actually it splits the rainforest in potentially in two, so elephants won't cross the road. So putting collars on elephants led to lots of other research and insights into elephants, which would never been done before.
Mm-hmm. And that's amazing because I think, you know, from that, like you said, so much different research has stemmed. And I think there's more of an understanding about the kind of importance that elephants play in, you know, biodiversity, in, you know, things like seed dispersal. Mm. I know I've spoken to Ahimsa about that as well. So much has come from it.
Yeah.
But where exactly did you conduct these sorts of research? Where did you have to go? Like, I mean, you mentioned the jungle and 2 a.m. What are the kind of places that you went to?
It's all in peninsular Malaysia, in the in central Malaysia where the rainforests are.
Okay.
And I don't know, 2-3 hours drive from here north, in those sorts of areas.
Okay. And I guess you would have to have partnered with, you know, with the locals, with the people, you know, must have had some local partnerships that had to be sort of fostered. Who did you kind of approach to when starting this out?
So obviously Yaya Sansai and Darby, they were funding this research. They were very important to us. And also the Department of Wildlife and National Parks of Peninsular Malaysia, they were a very important partner. We couldn't do the work without them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very much a cross-disciplinary research, but also cross-universities and agency research.
Mm-hmm. I guess, yes, you know, the very holistic approach to it. And how have you brought your students into all of this?
Well, we've had a number of students who've worked on this project. So, for example, one of our students, Dr. E. Pin Wong, graduated last February, I mean only recently, with a PhD for her study on the non-invasive study of stress in wild elephants. Mm-hmm. Two other students, He Ning and Ang Tan, received their Masters in Research for the study of elephant social behaviour and distribution. Mm-hmm. So, and those weren't projects that we, in 2011, that we would have even thought of, but it's one of these things that once you start getting into it, opens up a lot of other research directions. And there's many more that we could do, I'm sure, and many of which we don't even know about yet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, thanks to the funding that we receive from YSD and from our other stakeholders, the support, you know, it gives us the opportunity to look at different areas.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what would you say are some of the other success stories? I mean, obviously, yes, new research has come of it, but what would you say are some of the positive outcomes from all of this?
I think certainly awareness. As I say, I wasn't even aware of that there was a problem with elephants or human-elephant conflict. And it's now, it's one of our flagships. If you go to the UK, we're a UK university. If you go to our UK campus, if someone puts up any pictures of our research that's been done in Malaysia, elephants will always appear. I mean, because in the UK, elephants are seen as nice animals, not as pests. So Ahimsa's research will always appear. And in fact, we've just done a big campaign in Kuala Lumpur over the last 2-3 weeks, and we had we took over the you know, the big cube outside of Lot 10 on Bukit Bintang.
Yes.
We were advertising on there.
Yes.
Ahimsa's work there was Ahimsa and the elephants were shown on that big cube. So certainly awareness. I mean, that's been the major thing. And I think that's important, because if people are aware of the problem, then people can start addressing it and start looking at it. Mm-hmm. But I think it also leads to other things. I mean, you talked about seed dispersal a number of times, and it always fascinates me that I don't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But Himsa once told me that elephants are the only animals that can swallow a mango whole.
Yes. you told me the same thing.
Yeah. And I, when he told me that, I thought, well, why is that important? And he said, well, because otherwise mango trees are only ever going to grow where mangoes fall.
Yep.
He said, elephants are the only animals that can disperse those seeds. So if you wipe out the elephants, and there's only 1,500 elephants left in Peninsular Malaysia, if you wipe out those elephants or they go extinct, then you're going to affect lots of other things. For example, mango trees, they might eventually go extinct if plants do go extinct, because they're not being dispersed over the land. So I was at a meeting in Nottingham recently, and I told exactly the same story. And everyone looked at me, because people in the UK don't really know a lot about elephants, don't know a lot about mangoes. I said, go and buy a mango from Sainsbury's. And I said, get the seed and try and swallow it, then you'll understand.
And durians, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
So I suppose then, you know, what about the challenges that were faced? You know, any struggles, and how do you hope to overcome those?
Yeah, I think, I mean, two of the challenges, the human-elephant conflict will not always be there, but we need to work out how to work with farmers so that, you know, they have an appreciation for what elephants do for them and for the country and for the landscape, etc. So that's an ongoing challenge. I think poaching is another problem.
Yeah.
Poaching in Malaysia is certainly a massive problem, as it is in around the world where there's rhinos and where there's elephants. And I know in the last 100 years, two species of rhinos have gone extinct in Malaysia.
Yeah.
And if we don't do anything, then elephants will go the same way. And, you know, they're obviously poached for their ivory. So poaching is a big problem. And I wish I knew what we could do about that. Obviously, we face problems in Malaysia. They face problems in Africa and other places around the world. And I guess that's the biggest danger to elephants worldwide. There's got to be some research. There's got to be some awareness. But, you know, it's down to money in the end, that if you can get some ivory and sell it, then... So it probably needs government. It probably needs some policy makers to make decisions about, you make the sale and the export of ivory socially, not... You know, you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
That's not research, really. That's about making policy changes. And then the other big issue I think we have in Malaysia at the moment is the small population. There's only 1,500, which is a small population to maintain anyway. But if we start splitting those populations up by taking out parts of the rainforest and putting in other things, whether it's urban landscapes or whether it's other crops, you know, you gradually divide those populations up, and once you get to a certain number, then, and 1,500 might be that number now, actually, once you get to that number, it's really difficult to sustain. So I think human-elephant conflict, poaching, and small populations of elephants are the major challenges.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose, you know, through this work also, you hope to change mindsets, you know, to as you said, you know, tell the farmers that maybe there are ways to work together and to mitigate this sort of conflict. So these are all the kind of things that will come and stem from this research as well.
Yeah, I mean, it would be fantastic if, I mean, through programs such as this, if farmers got in touch and said, look, we don't want to kill elephants, you know, that's not what we're here for, but we have to have a way of making a living.
Yep.
So how can we work with you? And, you know, if farmers want to get in contact with us, I'm sure that we would love to go and talk to them and work with them, find out what their problems are.
Mm-hmm.
And then try and mitigate and find ways to get around those problems.
Yeah. And what's next for in terms of the research for me? Because now you've got an extension until end of 2019. Tell me a little bit about what's next.
Yeah, I mean, 2019 is not that far away. I mean, it's 18 months. And obviously, once we get to December 2019, we can't just suddenly
stop
and we can't suddenly start looking for research then. So we're always looking for a way to extend that research. I'm sure that we'll go and tap YSD on the back again and say, can you fund it even further? We would love to work with international organisations. I mean, it would be great. We've not had any conversations with these people. It would be great to talk to people like the Gates Foundation about, you know, if they could fund some research and maybe extend it across Asia and Africa. So, you know, we're very focused at the moment on Peninsular Malaysia. There's obviously Borneo, which have got a small elephant population, but there's a whole issue around Africa. And if we could link up with some of the major funding agencies around the world, that will be fantastic. But all of these things take time and take effort to try and get there. So we really need to focus our efforts not only on the research, but how do we sustain this research going forward.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, for anyone listening, what would you like to, any message you would like to leave us with?
I would love people to look at some of our research, but some of the papers are quite technical. But I would love you to get in touch with us. We could point you to some Elephant Conservation 101 papers so you could actually see, you know, in words of one syllable rather than some of the technical stuff that some scientists put in their papers for good reason. So we'd love you to get in touch with us and be aware. And then, you know, we would be very happy to tell you about our ongoing research, you know, get you on our newsletter. And it is about creating awareness, and we would love to do that.
Okay, so just keep that conversation going, I suppose,
as well.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much, Professor.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Professor Graham Kendall. He is the Provost and CEO of University of Nottingham, Malaysia. And we were discussing two specific areas of research that the university is going into, the management and ecology of Malaysian elephants, and also using papaya leaves as a cure for dengue. If you'd like any more information, you can head to their website, which is nottingham.edu.my. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.